Hello and welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM, the weekly programme for teachers, policymakers and anyone with an interest in teaching and learning. I'm Sean Delaney and you can download podcasts of previous programmes by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the podcasts tab. My guest on today's programme, Mike Vacanti, was the architect of The Ultimate Sweat, a bet where two brothers, one weighing 138 kilograms, the other weighing 61 kilograms, yes, less than half of his older brother, were given 1 year to be exactly the same weight and to win $150,000. Spoiler alert, they did it. And in today's programme, Mike Vacanti explains how. Mike Vacanti is a personal trainer who works online with clients from all around the world. His business model includes documenting his own fitness progress and priorities and sharing his personal philosophy through hundreds of informational and educational videos and vlogs on his YouTube channel. For 2 years, he accompanied Gary Vee as his personal fitness coach. I wanted to find out more about Mike Vacanti's education and how it influenced his ideas about health and fitness. I wanted to get his thoughts on the kind of physical education that can help students in schools today. I met up with Mike Vacanti in his New York apartment to talk about teaching and learning, health and fitness. I began our conversation by asking Mike what his physical education was like at primary and secondary school.
We had health class, which was a sit-down classroom learning about issues of health. And then we had Phi-Ed, which was gym class. And they were both required classes. I grew up in Minnesota, in the middle of the USA, and was in a public school, and they were both required classes, I believe, every single year or almost every single year from kindergarten through 12th grade of high school. So in Phi-Ed, it was largely games, so inducing physical activity via competition with some, you know, like the Presidential Fitness Award, so there would be, you know, you test flexibility, you test speed, you test strength, started to become introduced, I want to say, in high school, so in grade 9. But yeah, then on the health side, it was a classroom setting, and we learned about everything from anatomy to, you know, basic stuff, but anatomy to nutrition to really many areas of health at a high level.
So a lot of what you remember seems to be about competition. Do you remember what kind of sports you would have played in elementary school, first of all?
Yeah, everything. So we would have a unit on, and a unit might last 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks, but everything from popular professional style sports, floor hockey because we weren't going to have skates on, basketball, touch football, soccer, and then to made up games. You know, your classics, dodgeball, some kind of kickball, some kind of, you know, combination of dodgeball, kickball that involved basically two teams and testing speed and agility and athleticism via games.
And apart from the ball games, I mean, would you have done things like, say, orienteering or swimming or running?
We ran in high school, so from age 14 on. No, we would run because we would test the mile. So there was running, but there wasn't orienteering. We had swimming as a unit as well. So that was a unit starting in 7th grade, I believe. So it would be have its own like 2 to 4 weeks.
And from what you remember of your own physical education growing up, what was most valuable to you about it?
Most valuable to me now?
Yeah.
Definitely my elective physical education courses in high school, which were beginner weightlifting in 9th grade and then advanced weightlifting 1 in grade 10, advanced weightlifting 2 in grade 11. I basically every year had an hour and a half during my day where I got to learn about and lift weights. So given what I do now as a trainer, strength coach, that was immensely valuable.
And you had to elect into those classes?
Correct.
So what attracted you to them?
I got cut from the hockey team in 8th grade, and I remember basically my dad saying, you can either like quit and that's completely fine and this might not be for you and we can go on ski trips and we can do this and that, or if you want to get better, strength training is a way to do it. And so I had an intrinsic motivation to get stronger, to get better at hockey.
And what would you like to have been different about your own physical education growing up?
I just would have wanted more of it. Like, we did a really good job, or I guess my school system did a really good job with Phi Ed class. Yeah, I don't know what I would have changed about it. On the health and nutrition side, like, we're talking 1997 to 2005, and a lot of the information we were fed was outdated.
In terms of health and nutrition.
So having more correct information would have been better there, but, you know, hindsight's 20/20.
Sure. And when you say the physical education, you'd like to have had more of that. How much did you have? How frequent were the classes?
They were every day in fifth grade through eighth grade. They were definitely every day.
And how did the weather impact on that? Was it indoor or outdoor? Because Minnesota is cold.
Minnesota's cold. It was usually indoor. So we had gym space, and whatever unit we were doing, like, I remember playing baseball in a gym. I remember, like, you know, we played volleyball in the gym. But when, you know, in the fall or in the spring, once it got warm outside, we would be outside.
And how did you learn what you learned then about nutrition, strength, and fitness? Did that come after? I mean, obviously some of it was being learned during this time, but when did you learn most of what you learned?
I learned most of what I know now in university through a combination of, one, just when I was 19, 20 years old, being very hungry for this knowledge for myself to make my own physical transformation. And so the internet, Lyle McDonald's website and books, bodyrecomposition.com was my introduction. And from there, a few other really helpful sources. And I got a business degree. In the process, I took two science electives that were required to get into the business school. And one was like a nutrition 101 course, and one was a classroom style PE, which was a prerequisite for kinesiology majors, I want to say, which was really hard, like competitive and a good course. But this nutrition 101, my freshman year of university, I remember learning about macronutrients, micronutrients, really the base of what I wish I would have known when I was 13, but was lucky enough to stumble upon it when I was 18.
And how do you keep up to date in a field where knowledge changes relatively quickly?
I don't know that I do a good job of that. I try to follow really smart people on Twitter and read both their work and the work that they tweet or push me towards. There are a couple good podcasts that I like listening to and kind of when specific guests are on, but I would say there are 8 to 12 men and women who I follow pretty thoroughly, and anything they put out that grabs my attention, I go there.
And who are they?
Yeah, so Brad Schoenfeld is one. Eric Helms is another. Dr. Rhonda Patrick. Mike Matthews is someone who has a big podcast who interviews a lot of those types of people, of, you know, some academics, some kind of more in the bodybuilding scene who are very science-based. Yeah, those are a few of them.
If you were consulted by the Secretary of State for Education, or in Ireland, the Minister for Education and Skills, about developing an optimal course for the physical education of youngsters, say from, you know, elementary school right up through the different years, what advice would you give them?
I would say that I think the most important thing for kids is finding a physical practice that they at least somewhat enjoy and can continue into the future. Because, you know, you can look at a subset of the population of, even call it like ripped people, like that's a very small percentage of the population, and there's something different about them where they, like, most people don't enjoy going to the gym, and some people do, but for the masses, I think that I'm biased towards strength training because I know and have seen its benefits, but some kind of physical practice making it fun for kids.
And when you say that you'd like the children to find a sports practice, mm-hmm. what do you mean by a sports practice? Because you're kind of deliberately not saying that you want them to find a sport that they really enjoy. So mm-hmm. I think you mean something broader when you say a sports practice.
Yeah. When I say practice, I think of something that they deliberately partake in on a regular basis at least a few times a week. And so strength training, yoga, running, a sport, which could be, you know, any ice hockey, like any sport. I just like practice because I think it's more all-encompassing, and I think there are a lot of ways, like bar class, like things that less traditional forms of strength training, that if someone can do consistently, might not be optimal, but is so much better than not doing anything, that getting kids hooked on it early would just yield so much upside for their lives.
Even though there's quite a difference between the impact that yoga will have on your life compared to strength training compared to, say, running.
Yeah, absolutely.
So would you like to see a combination, or is any one of them, would you be happy enough if every youngster has at least one of them?
If every single youngster had at least one of them, I would be happy. I mean, I'd be happiest if every single youngster had a combination of all three that they, but yes, I'd be happy if they had at least one of them. Because there's so much overlap, right? Like, if someone really loves running, they know that doing some strength training is going to benefit their running. If someone really loves lifting weights, they know that having some flexibility is going to benefit their strength training. Like, there's just so much overlap, too.
I know in Ireland, at least, I'm not sure in the States, but there tends to be a fall off in the later teen years, so mm-hmm. that youngsters who have this sports practice you're talking about, say through maybe 12, 13, 14, by the time they get to 17 or 18, some of them begin to fall off. How do you keep people motivated at that stage when they may actually drop away from the practice?
I don't know, even at this point with adults necessarily, how to motivate someone to do something.
Or what kept you motivated through those years?
I was insecure and I wanted to hook up with girls. And I wanted to continue to excel in hockey. Like, strength training worked, and shooting pucks every single day worked, and the practices I involved myself in, running worked, in plyometrics worked, and improving my endurance and my skill at the game. And the next year I made the team, and the year after that I was on junior varsity, and like, things were progressing. So,
but you had to put in an initial investment in the weights before you saw that they worked. So what was it that kept you motivated before you actually saw that it was making a difference?
I think I just believed my dad, / I saw what other people were doing. Upperclassmen in high school, when I was a freshman, I knew lifted weights and I knew they were good. And so kind of copy what they do so I can be like them. I remember my first time I like really experienced delayed onset muscle soreness and being like, this is stupid. Like, this isn't making me stronger. This is just making me hurt. This can't help. But there was enough evidence to the contrary that I kept going.
One reason why youngsters sometimes drop out is, and I've had, as a teacher, I had parents come in to me and say things like, you know, my son or my daughter, they're working really hard, they're training really hard, but they weren't picked for the team again this week. And I know you've had that experience and you've written about it. Mm-hmm. What would you say to that child who is doing their best, but they're not being picked for the team and they're consistently not being picked for the team?
It sucks. Like, the first thing I would say is I'm sorry, and that life isn't necessarily fair, and that maybe you're a little bit of a late bloomer. Maybe you haven't hit a growth spurt. Maybe there are kids who have a little bit more natural talent, but one thing that you can absolutely control is the amount of work you put into getting better at your craft, at your game, at whatever it is that you want to be playing and excel at. And on average, you will be able to outwork the people who are getting picked if you want to, if you make that choice. And results and progress and getting better at sports is directly correlated with the amount of work and type of work, intensity of work that you put in. And so, as hard as it is, I would do my best not to be discouraged by what's happening now and realize that 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, even 2 years in the future, you absolutely can be in the position that the best kids are in right now through deliberate, intense practice.
You were someone who obviously liked physical education when you were in school, but were there children in your class, for one reason or another, who didn't like physical education and, you know, who needed motivation, whether it was for body image or they had a disability or they disliked movement or whatever? What thoughts do you have on motivating people who are just not interested in the subject to be more participative in it?
It's something I definitely never thought about as a kid, sadly. I think if you show kids the benefits that can come with doing the thing, and also the worst case scenario, the downside of not doing it, and in this case, participating in physical activity, so being leaner, being stronger, more positive body image, over the course of a life, living longer, feeling better into old age, the habits that you can build as a kid truly impact the rest of your life. But at the same time, I don't know that that would motivate me as a 14-year-old, because I don't know that 14-year-olds have the capacity to, you know, think about their 29-year-old self. I think I'm not the guy to be giving advice to kids. I think that's...
But do you even remember people in your own class growing up who didn't like PE?
No.
You didn't notice
them? They were definitely there, but I was just like, we're playing hockey today. I mean, I think in my head, in general, girls were less likely to enjoy it than boys, because at that age, 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade, they didn't want to get sweaty. They didn't want to, you know, mess up their clothes or their hair. They wanted to look a certain way. And so I guess that comes to mind, but I don't remember boys in my classes who didn't like gym. They were definitely there. It was just an oversight, and it was just me, you know.
Well, I mean, yeah, but you don't necessarily think about your classmates if you're a teacher, you think about everybody. But when you're just in the class, you're more focused on yourself.
Yeah, that was definitely the case.
Yeah. I want to move to another area. Could you describe for listeners what the ultimate sweat was?
Yeah, definitely. So two brothers who are both professional online poker players were in they were in the Caribbean on this poker player billionaire friend of theirs has a house and has a boat, and they were streaming poker, so playing online poker at the same time live streaming it so people could watch them play and watch their reactions on Twitch. And someone in the chat said, Matt and Jamie, like, what are the odds they can weigh the exact same in 1 year? And these two brothers, who were 20 years old and 25 years old at the time, weighed, Matt, the younger brother, weighed 135 pounds, and Jamie, the older brother, weighed 305 pounds. And so they're 170 pounds apart, and someone threw a number out, 50-to-1 odds that they can do it. And Bill said... Or I think Bill said 50-to-1 odds, and Jamie said, how much can we bet on it? And he said $3,000. And Jamie said, like, looked at Matt, and he was like, we have to do this. We have to take this bet. Booked. And so they have this 50-to-1 odds chance to win $150,000, and they have 1 year to weigh within 1.0 pounds of each other to win $150,000. And so shortly thereafter, Jamie reached out to me. He knew of my content and hired me to coach them through the process. And that is what we did. This literally just wrapped up on March 25th, 2018. And Jamie got from 305 down to 188.3 pounds. And Matt went from 135 up to exactly 188.3 pounds. And so they won the bet. And yeah, it was crazy. And they actually just booked a second bet to win $150,000, this time at 3-to-1 odds. So they're putting up 50K. They're putting up some of their winnings, which is fun, where they both need to be under 10% body fat by March 25th, 2019. And so we have the Ultimate Sweat Part 2. But yeah, that was what the last year of my life has largely consisted of, which was really fun.
And as their mentor, what did you have to keep in mind when guiding Jamie to lose weight and Matt to gain weight?
This bet was all about scale weight. And scale weight over time is a sum of habits around nutrition and exercise. And for Jamie, we knew that the plan was a pretty aggressive calorie deficit a moderate amount of strength training and a solid amount at least, and it became even more of cardio. Low intensity cardio was his preferred method. So really just making sure that if and when he had a bad day with nutrition, because that is inevitable on any journey to kind of fall off, especially when you're a 305-pound guy trying to eat 1,400 calories because you know you are targeting 120 pounds of weight loss in a year, just getting right back on the horse anytime a bad day or kind of a cheat weekend came up. For Matt, he came out of the gate swinging. He had a history of strength training, and so getting into the gym wasn't a huge issue for him, but just getting enough food down to put the weight, both muscle and fat, on his frame was not super easy. So for him, it was just making sure he was getting enough calories on a daily basis.
So on balance, from your perspective, do you think Matt had the whose challenge was to gain weight, had he the easier task of the two?
You know, it's hard to pick one or the other here because they were in such different places physically and psychologically at the beginning of the bet with such different histories and such different tasks. But yes, like gun to my head, Jamie had a little bit tougher route, even though both accomplishments were unbelievable.
Yeah, they really were. What did you learn from the experience of being their mentor over the year?
A lot, and probably a lot that I don't even know that I learned, that I have internalized in some way. One being a motto, consistency over perfection, that I preach nonstop, that is just so true when it comes to making long-term progress. Because Matt had chunks of time throughout the bet where he wasn't as consistent with getting to the gym, and Jamie had chunks of time where he wasn't as consistent with staying in that calorie deficit, but getting right back on any time that they diverted from the path is what ultimately led to them succeeding. So just that and its application to any journey, any endeavor, just knowing that you're never going to be perfect, you're never going to do anything perfectly, but still trucking on and doing your best really does lead to success.
And going back to what you said about, you know, needing a boss yourself, how strict were you as their mentor in terms of trying to keep them on track consistently during the year?
Not super strict. Not super strict.
But they did feel accountable to you.
I mean, you would have to ask them, but yes, they did. Not super strict. And what I mean by that is for a lot of days, I had them send me daily weigh-ins because that's one form of accountability that is fairly aggressive but really works. For chunks of time, I had them send me daily food logs, like either send me your macro totals for the day or send me a screenshot of literally all the foods you ate today. But if they missed a day or two on weights or on macros, I didn't get on their case, at least not directly, because I think that would have been demotivating, and I think would be demotivating for a lot of people to have someone, like, I just don't think drill sergeant style works in the long run. And so I prefer to guilt them more than like yell at them if they're going off track, right? Like if I haven't gotten scale weight in a couple days and we're in our group thread and we're going back and forth on stuff, but they're not sending weights, I would much rather craft some kind of like, is everything okay? Like that kind of a message, which inevitably leads to scale weight the next day and like back on it, than, dude, what the heck? Like, why aren't you sending, like coming at it from that angle?
Because it's a delicate balancing act, because on the one hand, you don't want them saying, oh, well, Mike doesn't really care how we're doing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you don't want to be that hard taskmaster.
Right, right. It is. I think just approaching communication, and there's instances where, you know, being harder makes sense. But I just think encouragement is so much more effective, even in situations like this, in garnering accountability than coming with the stick.
What, if anything, would you do differently if you were back in 2017 again, in March 2017 again?
To help them succeed with the...
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was a success, so that's kind of hypothetical, but you know, is there anything that could have made their journey more smooth, or that, you know, you would kind of say, oh, I mean, it's a pity we didn't do X?
I would have tried harder to get more money on them. With hindsight, you know where the number ends up. I would have told Matt that we could have come out the gate a little bit slower, focused a little bit more on food quality, and had him tracking calories and macros, or at least estimating from the get-go, because he put on 20 pounds intentionally, like it was our plan. $75,000 was an absurd amount of money for him, so he was okay with adding more body fat than necessary. But we could have come out the gate a little bit slower with his rate of weight gain, which could have, over the course of the year, led to a little bit more muscle gain and a little bit less fat gain. Other than that, I don't think there's anything I would have done differently.
And what lessons can people more generally take from the achievement of the two brothers?
You know, I think one is that financial-based incentives are very effective, as can be social pressure incentives, because these guys, Jamie especially, have big social media followings, and they were making content around the bet, and there was a lot of pressure, which didn't always feel good for them through the course of this. Like, you know, if Jamie didn't lose weight for 3 weeks and he posted an update where he hadn't lost weight for 3 weeks, people were ruthless, which doesn't feel good, but which is motivating. So I think both of those things, whether you can get yourself in a position to positively incentivize an outcome that you want with some kind of reward, or you can put yourself in a position where there's a negative outcome if you don't accomplish something you want to, that is going to increase your odds of success. And to take things even a step back further, having an outcome that you want, right? Like having a goal, having some kind of vision, having something you're working towards is necessary to ensure that you're moving in the right direction. So yeah, using positive or negative reward and social pressure to incentivize an outcome you want. And like I said before, just realizing that you're never going to be perfect. Don't strive for perfection. Strive for pretty good every day, and strive to get better every day, like 1% better every day. Or if you have a bad day, try to never have two bad days in a row. Like, those are little mindset tricks that are going to lead to progress over time.
And that message about consistency over perfection comes from fitness and strength coach Mike Vacanti, whose website is ontheregimen.com. I want to thank Mike for his time in recording the interview. To download over 300 Inside Education podcasts, go to seandelaney.com. My book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, is available from all good online bookshops and libraries. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.